So I have a confession to make. Pastor Josh let the cat out of the bag a couple weeks ago, but I actually have never heard that song before this series started. We're in a series right now called Signs, and if you think about it, the point of a sign is to point you to something, or it's to inform you of something. And this series right now, we're going through the Gospel of John. It's one of the four Gospels, and it's John's account of the life of Jesus. In his Gospel, he has seven signs, seven things that are pointing to something about Jesus. He doesn't call them miracles. He doesn't use any other term. He specifically calls them signs because he wants us to know that these things are pointing to something about Jesus. Now, in the world of sports, specifically, all the greats have some kind of signature move, okay? So if I were to say the sky hook, right? Whose signature move would that be? Call it out. Go ahead. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, that's right. Or if I was going to say whose trademark would be sticking out the tongue, right, whenever he made a move. Michael Jordan, of course, Michael Jordan, right? Or how about the jumping throw across the baseball diamond? Whose move is that? Derek Jeter. All right, outside the sports world, what about the moonwalk? Michael Jackson, I'm not going to try that one. But they've got these signature moves. The sign that we're going to talk about today has kind of become like a signature move for Jesus. It's something he's really known for. It's walking on water. He's really been the only one who's tried this and has been able to pull it off. And he's just gotten really famous for doing this. In fact, it's even gotten into the animal kingdom. Let's throw that picture up there. This is a lizard. Now, this lizard has the ability to run across the water so fast that it actually can stand on the water. It can run on the water. And it has earned its name, the Jesus Christ lizard, because of what it can do. I'm not kidding. I'm serious. Artists have tried to capture this moment, this thing that Jesus is so famous for. Maybe you've seen this picture before. There's Jesus very casually helping Peter, who is sinking in the water. Here's another picture. This one's a little bit more creepy because Jesus is glowing in the distance. But there he is again, walking on water, coming toward his disciples. The movie realm has tried to tackle this issue. We've got Jesus here being filmed walking on water. Now, if you look carefully, you could see that the real miracle worker is underwater with his hands up holding Jesus. He could probably use a breath of fresh air at that point. Even the toy industry, Lego, has tried to grasp this concept. There's Lego Jesus walking on Lego water. If you like to read comics or newspapers or whatever, you'll see, I'm sure you've seen something like this where they, you know, poke fun at the fact that Jesus is walking on water. This says, the water hazard holds little fear for Jesus. And there he is hitting a golf ball on top of the water. Here's another one. There's two people on the shore looking out at Jesus walking on water, and they say, it's got to be the sandals. Last one, this is my favorite one. The caption is young Jesus at bath time and there's Mary in, right? I guess those are the kinds of problems you have when your child is God. So Jesus has gotten pretty famous for this whole walking on water idea. You've probably heard that Jesus could walk on water. You may have even read the account in the Gospels. But what I want you to see this morning is that a lot of times what we do is we take passages of the Bible and we pull them out of their context. And when we do that, we kind of miss something. We'll take a verse or two and just read it by itself, and sometimes you can get away with that. But sometimes you miss what the writer of Scripture is trying to help you see. So I want to take this story of Jesus walking on water and plug it back into the context and hopefully reintroduce you to why this happened, what John actually wants us to see here as he records Jesus walking on water. So we're going to read the text together, or actually I'll just read it. You can listen. It's pretty short. It says this: when evening came, his disciples, those 12 people that followed Jesus everywhere, they went down to the sea. Now, this is the Sea of Galilee they're talking about. He says they get into a boat and started across the sea to Capernaum. That was the next stop on their Jesus trip. It was now dark and Jesus had not yet come to them. Moving on, it says the sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. Now, as I mentioned, this is the Sea of Galilee. Nothing good ever happened on the Sea of Galilee. If you've ever read in the Bible an issue where or a time when these people are going out on the Sea of Galilee, you never read that they all went out, had a great time, went on a fishing trip, came back, and everything was hunky-dory. Every time something terrible happens. So they decide they're going to go out, and sure enough, there's a rough. It gets rough, and there's a strong wind blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, so they're 3 or 4 miles into the sea, they see Jesus, and he's walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were frightened. Keep going. It says, but Jesus said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him onto the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. So that's our story. That's it. That's our passage for today. The interesting thing, there are a few interesting things about this sign that John is talking about. For one, he never actually refers to it as a sign. All the other ones he refers to as signs. This one he never calls it a sign. And it's kind of troubling because John doesn't really draw a conclusion. There's no moral of the story. It just ends. It's just a couple of sentences explaining this crazy story. If you write for a newspaper or a magazine, or if you're a news anchor, you would be salivating over this story. It's like there's a storm, there's a guy, and he's walking on the water, and then he brings these people to where they want to go. This is crazy. You'd want to know every person's point of view. You'd want to interview each one of the disciples. You would want to give us all the details because this is such an unforgettable event. And John here, he can hardly muster up 4 sentences for us. John fails creative writing on this assignment. But the interesting thing about this is that it is so intimately woven into the context of the story that we talked about last week, the sign that we talked about last week. And as I was studying this passage all week, I couldn't help but feel like if we're going to take it and rip it out of its context, we would be missing something. We would be missing something that John is trying to tell us. So we have this story that Josh told us last week, the bread of life, this whole narrative where Jesus feeds the 5,000. And right smack in the middle of it, just it interrupts the story, we see Jesus walking on water. Why? Why did John just plug it in there? What's the point? Well, we've got to see the bigger story. So we'll recap real quick about what Pastor Josh spoke to us about last week. Jesus is teaching these people, these Jewish people, and they get hungry. And he's about to wrap up his teaching, but they don't know what they're going to eat. So he gets a couple of loaves, and to make a long story short, he multiplies it, and 5,000 people, over 5,000 people, have eaten. It's a miracle. It's crazy. Now, the people that he's teaching, they're Jewish people. He's speaking to a Jewish audience, and here's what you need to understand. About 1,500 years ago, they had a guy named Moses. You've probably heard of him. Moses delivered these people from political oppression and also gave them bread, miraculously. They called it manna. It was bread from heaven. So you see a guy like Jesus. He pulls off this crazy miracle where he feeds these 5,000 people. And the Jews, they've got to be asking themselves, who is this guy? Who can do this? Where does a guy like this come from? They're wrestling with this question of who is Jesus? And they start to connect the dots in their heads, and they're thinking, well, Moses was able to give us bread miraculously. Maybe Jesus is the Moses that we've been waiting for. Right before Moses left earth, the Jews were told that another prophet like Moses would come. So they're trying to connect the dots. They're thinking, this might be our Moses 2.0. And you can't really blame them, because for 1,400 or 1,500 years, they're just waiting and waiting and waiting. It's like they've been staring at the pinwheel for 1,400 years. Or maybe if you haven't quite seen the light yet, maybe you're staring at this for the next 1,400 years. Right? So they're getting anxious. They're like, we've got to know who this guy is. Is he our Moses? Is he not? Is he just some other prophet? Who is Jesus? So then we get to today's text, the passage we just read before. The disciples, they know that the next stop on their little Jesus trip, extravaganza, whatever you want to call it, is Capernaum. And they're waiting for Jesus. They know they've got to cross the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus doesn't show up. They're waiting for him. He's not around. And they're like, what do we do? What do we do? And they decide, we're going to go without him. Now, if you've ever watched a horror movie, and you come to that point where you're like, no, don't go in the house, you know, where everybody's like screaming, don't do that, but they do it anyway. If you were watching this is what you'd be saying. You'd be like, why are you going to leave the miracle worker behind? He just did, you know, he just did this huge miracle, and you're going to go without him. So, whatever. They decide to go without him. And they get onto the Sea of Galilee. Now, just to give you some geographical context, the Sea of Galilee is 600 feet below sea level. And what that means is that in an instant, it can be sunny, and then all of a sudden, it could be like you're in the midst of this terrible, horrible, horrible storm. It comes on like that. So they could have gone out thinking everything was going to be great, and all of a sudden, they're in a huge storm. The Sea of Galilee has now turned into this extremely dangerous place to be, and there they are, without Jesus. They're being tossed back and forth 3 to 4 miles off of the shore. They're at the mercy of the water, which is a scary thing if you've ever been in a situation like that. My dad, when I was growing up, he was a lifeguard. And he always taught me, he said, no matter what situation you're in, you have to respect the water. You have to respect the water. And I have always remembered that. Except this one time I didn't remember that. I was in school. I was at Eastern University. I went there for a semester. And there was this little stream. It's kind of like a brook, and it passed through the entire campus. But there were multiple different ponds and bodies of water that would overflow into this stream. So if it rained for a while, this little stream would all of a sudden become this like rushing river. And I saw it, and I thought it was really cool that there was all this water just passing through the stream. And there was actually a bridge in the middle of campus that went over the stream. And the water was going over the bridge. That's how strong this current had gotten. So being the dumb freshman that I was, I go into the woods with a friend, and we walk like hundreds of yards into the woods because we want to catch the stream and be able to ride it back to campus. You see where this is going. So I was totally convinced that this was going to be a great idea until I jumped into the water. As soon as I got into the water, I felt my body yanked in the other direction, and I realized I put myself in a really dangerous situation. I looked ahead and I saw that there was this almost like a dam that was being formed. There were branches that were starting to collect. There were logs that were starting to collect, and the water was pushing up against it. And then there was another part where the water was going around, and I was headed toward that section where everything was collected. And I could see the water going underneath this pile of brush and branches. And at this point, I'm actually starting to fear for my life because I can't get out of the water. I'm being yanked down this river, and I'm headed right toward this area of brush, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to get out if I had gotten sucked under. So now I'm fearing for my life. There was a branch, this root, that happened to be right along the bank, and I was able to grab onto it, and I can feel it getting weaker. I'll spare you the suspense. I end up making it. But in that moment, I felt like I was at the mercy of the water. Fortunately, the branch didn't break. I was able to pull myself to safety. Unfortunately, because my body was being pulled in this other direction, once my adrenaline had kind of, you know, gone back to normal, I realized that I had no pants on. They had been totally ripped from me. So here I am in the middle of the woods, pretty far from my dorm, with no pants. I'm not going to tell you how I got back to my dorm. So here are these disciples. They're 3 to 4 miles offshore, and they're at the mercy of the water. This is not, if they were to go in the water in these waves, they're not going to be able to swim back. At this point, they're fearing for their lives. And then, all of a sudden, they see Jesus walking toward them. Now, you would think they'd look and be like, oh good, it's Jesus. The guy who healed the paralyzed man, the guy who fed the 5,000, the guy who just, every situation, this guy seems to impress us, and here he is, walking on the water, oh great. But that's not their reaction. They're scared. I think that John wants us to see here that there's something the disciples still didn't understand about Jesus. He, like I just read, he comes to them, he says, it's okay, it's me, don't be afraid. And they were okay. And before they knew it, they were back on the shore. They were in a safe place, but they're wrestling with this question, who is this guy? Who is this Jesus? Now, if we were going to take this message totally out of its context and just talk about the walking on water, we could say, oh, Jesus will come to you in the storm, and we could wrap it up there, and that would be the end of the sermon. And maybe some of you would like it if that was the end of the sermon. But unfortunately, I think John wants us to see something bigger. So the story continues. And they get on the other side, and Jesus starts teaching them this message. He says, I am the bread of life. And again, the discussion begins about Moses. And the people are like, wait a minute, bread of life, the bread that came down from heaven. Wait, so is he this Moses guy? And they're struggling with this question, who is Jesus? And Jesus says, no, I am not the next Moses. I am the bread from heaven. I am God's provision personified for you. He's trying to explain to them. He's saying, I'm the answer to the deep hurt, the deep hunger that your soul has. That's what Pastor Josh explained to us last week, that whole context. If you want to listen to the message, it's on our website. But it's this amazing picture of Jesus saying, I am what your heart needs, whether you realize it or not. And what's their response, these people? They say, he said he's the bread from heaven, but we know his dad. We know that Joseph was a carpenter. This guy didn't come from heaven. Isn't he just the carpenter's son? And they're wrestling with this question. Who is Jesus? Who is this guy? Ultimately, the people, they can't handle the teachings that Jesus gives. They can't handle the claims that he's making. And many of them walk away from him. They leave him. Thousands of them say, no, this isn't for us. And they walk away. And with one sermon, this is like every pastor's worst nightmare. In one sermon, his church attendance goes from 5,000 plus to 12. He probably would have been fired for most churches, but that's what happens. He loses these thousands of people. And then he turns to his 12, the 12 disciples. And he says, what about you guys? Are you guys going to leave me too? And Peter, one of the disciples, he's like this really impulsive, sometimes brilliant, sometimes not so brilliant guy. He responds right away to Jesus and he says, are we going to leave you? To whom shall we go? Where else are we going to go? He says, you alone hold the words of eternal life, meaning you alone know the truth about this whole thing called life that we're trying to understand. And then he says, we have come to believe and we have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. Ding, ding, ding. Finally, this question is answered. Who is Jesus? Who is he? Finally, the disciples understand. And that's why, because they understood who he was, that's why they stay when everybody else leaves. Jesus is the Holy One of God. He's God himself. He's the bread to your hunger. And they got that. They understood when nobody else did. So that's kind of the story in its entirety. And as I mentioned, while I was preparing this message this week, I wrestled with this question. Okay, great story. Great. You know, I love Jesus feeding the 5,000. I love, like, you know, his whole message about the bread of life. It's really dramatic when Peter says, to whom shall we go? That's great. But why did he plug in this walking on water incident right into the middle of it? Why? What does John want us to get? What does he want us to know? And here's what I think he wants us to see. The difference between the people that stayed, those very few people that stayed, and the thousands that walked away, there was one thing, one major thing that was different between the two groups of people. You see, the 12 had seen Jesus walk on water. They had seen Jesus come to them in the storm. And I think that John wants us to see that that's why they knew who he really was. Here's what I want you to get this morning. Here's what I think that John, in writing this gospel, wants us to see. It's that sometimes it's in the storm that you learn who Jesus really is. Sometimes it's in the storm that you learn who Jesus really is. If you remember nothing else from this morning, remember that. You see, over 5,000 people saw Jesus take those few loaves and multiply them. It was a miracle. It was amazing. 5,000 people saw that, more than 5,000. Plenty of people saw Jesus heal the paralyzed man at the pool. If you remember, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. People knew he could do that too. It was well known to the public that Jesus could do miracles. That's why the centurion came to Jesus and asked him to heal his child, because his reputation had spread. People knew Jesus could do cool things. And some may have even seen Jesus turn that water into wine. So people knew that Jesus could do really cool things, but only the 12 knew that he could walk on water. Only the 12 saw him come to them in the storm. And I think that John wants us to see that while each one of these signs, each one of the signs we've seen thus far have pointed to Jesus as the Son of God, have pointed to who Jesus is, it was Jesus' willingness to walk on water, to save his disciples from the storm that pushed them over the edge, that enabled them to come to believe and to know that Jesus was who he said he was. And here's why. With all the other signs, the disciples may have been impressed with Jesus' power. But only in the storm were they relying on it. You see, when they ran out of bread, when everybody needed something to eat, it was like, okay, Jesus, what are you going to do? And Jesus is like, okay, here's 5,000 loaves of bread. Wow, that was pretty cool. Or there's a paralyzed guy, and they see him when he was doing that sign. It's like, oh, Jesus, what are you going to do with this paralyzed guy? Oh, look, he's talking to him. He's telling him to get up and walk. That's pretty neat. Wow, Jesus just did another miracle. Or the wine. Jesus, we're out of wine. What are you going to do? And Jesus does another miracle. And that's pretty cool. It's impressive. It points to who Jesus is. Not many people could do those things. But in the storm, when they were being tossed back and forth by these winds, 3 miles off of the shore, not knowing if they're going to make it out, it was then that they're relying on Jesus' power, and they see him come through for them. And I think that's how they knew that Jesus was who he said he was. Not because they were impressed with his power, but because they needed it. They were relying on it. I was just talking last night with somebody who was at one of our financial peace classes, and we got talking about the sermon that I was going to talk about this week. And he said something interesting. He said, you know, when you think about it, it really is a gift that Jesus let the disciples go out by themselves on the water. Because if he hadn't let them go through that storm, they wouldn't have seen him walk on water. They might not have known who he really was. Sometimes it's in the storms that you learn who Jesus really is. Look at Peter's tone of voice when he answers this question. When Jesus says, are you guys going to leave too? Peter doesn't sit there and go, no, Lord, we'll stay with you because we are your best and most loyal and grateful followers. So we're going to try as hard as we can. And even though everybody left, we're going to stick behind. No. Jesus says, are you going to leave too? And Peter says, to whom shall we go? Who else can do the things that you do? They have learned to rely on his power. And that's the amazing thing about the storms that life will throw at us, whether they're big or little. They have the ability to show us who Jesus is. Not because we're impressed by the things that he can do, but because it's in the storms that we learn to rely on him. My guess is that most of us in here, many of us in here, probably have different views of Jesus. Maybe some of us are coming in here, we haven't been here that often, we're just kind of checking things out. We're like, all right, I don't really know about this Jesus guy. Maybe we'll stick around here for a little longer. That's okay. We love that you're here. Please, ask all the questions. Stick around for as long as you want. Then I think that there's some people here who probably have more of the I'm going to try as hard as I can kind of attitude. I want to be as loyal as I can to Jesus. And while that sounds good, I don't know that that's the way that Jesus wants us to live. Because then I would guess that there are some people in here that could say with complete confidence that Jesus is who he says he is. And my guess would be that those people are the people who have seen Jesus in the storms, the little storms and the big ones, the life-changing ones and the trivial ones. They've learned not just to be impressed, not just to admire his power, but they've learned to rely on it. And it's for that reason that they know for sure that Jesus is who he says he is, because they've seen him come through for them when they needed it. When they were in the storm, they've learned to rely on him day in and day out. And as they've learned to rely on him for peace in troubled times, for joy in the midst of uncertainty, for whatever, maybe they've come to the end of themselves and realize that they can't do it anymore, and they go to Jesus for his grace. It's those people that have seen Jesus in the storm where I would bet if you ask them, hey, is this worth it to you? Hey, are you going to really stick with this Christianity thing? Would you ever leave Jesus? It's probably those people that have walked with Jesus in the storm that would look at you and say, to whom shall I go? Nobody else could give me what Jesus has given me. Nobody else can do the things that he's done. Now, if you're just checking this out, if you're new to the whole Jesus thing, and I know that some of you are, what you need to understand is that when we're up here, when Josh and I stand up here and we invite you to follow Jesus, we aren't asking you to join a church. We aren't asking you to subscribe to some moral code or to obey some set of rules. We're not asking you to be a better person or to try and do the right thing and get your act together and become religious. We're here trying to introduce you to somebody who called himself the bread of life, to somebody who said, I am what your heart is thirsting for, to Jesus. To somebody who took your pain, your punishment, and took them on himself on the cross so that you could live a guilt-free life. We're trying to introduce you to that guy. Please don't think that we're here trying to give you some do's and don'ts. That's not what church is about. He's the answer to what your heart is looking for. So this morning, as we wrap this up, I want you to think about the storm that's in your life. It might be a big storm. Maybe it's a huge life-changing thing. Maybe it's a time of uncertainty. Maybe it's a sickness you just found out about. Maybe it's a loss. Maybe it's something you just don't understand. Or maybe it's small. Maybe it's just the struggles we face on a regular basis, little storms. And I would invite you to look to Jesus. Not to just go to him and be impressed by his power or to admire who he might be, but to rely on him. To rely on him to come through for you. To rely on him to meet you where you are. Because this might just be your chance to see him walk on water. Sometimes it's in the storm that you learn who Jesus really is. Let's pray. God, we're grateful that you're patient with us, that you understand that so many of us in here don't understand you or who you are or how good you are to us. But I ask that this week, as each one of us faces storms, struggles, battles, things that we need to get over, that you would make yourself clear to us, that we would see you come through, that we would know that we could give these anxieties and these burdens over to you, and you'll take them. That we could walk freely, not carrying the weight that so many of us do. We know that you'll come through for us, just like you did for those disciples who were scared on that boat. Well, thank you for it. Amen.